Hello, I'm Rob, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 19th of April, 2023.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacons. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Christine, Angela, Liz, Ian, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course not forgetting, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition we have local news for the Black Country, an update from Beacon, the quiz with Mina, our fortnightly bulletin of practical information and sight loss tips, the latest news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather for the week ahead. And with the spring sunshine seemingly now setting, we have an article sharing some tips on things to do in the garden this month. Local news to start though, and we have a feature from the Electoral Services at Wolverhampton Council detailing the changes and support that will be available at polling stations for the forthcoming elections in May.
Hello, I'm Chris Lightwood, Electoral Services Apprentice at the City of Wolverhampton Council.
And I'm Laura Noonan, Electoral Services Manager.
We're going to tell you about the elections taking place in May and the improvements we are making in polling stations to ensure that people affected by sight loss are aware of the support available to help make your mark on the ballot paper. We will also cover the voting options available to you and the deadline dates to apply for postal and proxy votes. On Thursday the 4th of May 2023, there will be local elections taking place in Wolverhampton, where all 60 councillor seats are up for election following the local government boundary review.
And these elections are also the first elections to be held under the new measures that have been brought in by the Election Act, which introduces the requirement to show photo ID in a polling station and to also make polling stations more accessible for people with disabilities. So to vote in a polling station, you will now need to bring an acceptable form of ID, such as a passport or driving licence. If you do not have an acceptable form of ID, you can apply for a free voter ID document known as a voter authority certificate. If you need assistance applying for a voter authority certificate in person, there are daily drop-in sessions taking place at Wolverhampton Civic Centre between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on weekdays. And a full list of acceptable ID and further information about applying for a voter authority certificate can be found on our website at www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/elections.
If you choose to vote in person at the polling station, there's a range of support available to you. All of the key signage in the polling station will now be printed on a yellow background, black text to make it more accessible. The slot on the ballot paper will have white stickers around it to make it more visible. You can also request additional lighting from polling staff. If you have difficulty completing the standard print ballot paper, you can request the use of a tactile voting device to help mark your vote in the correct place. The tactile voting device has a sticky backing which attaches on the top of your ballot paper. It has numbered lift-up flaps directly over the boxes where you mark your vote. The numbers are raised and in braille. You can request the use of a large print ballot form from the polling station as a guide to follow, or ask someone to read out the lists of candidates to you. This can be a companion or polling station staff. The candidates are in alphabetical order. You will need to remember the number of the candidate you wish to vote for. Then lift the flap with the same number and mark your cross in the box. You can then detach the tactile device and fold your ballot paper in half before posting it in the ballot box. Seeing AI apps or video magnifying glasses can also be used in polling stations as a reasonable adjustment in the Equality Act. Please inform the presiding officer in the polling station if you will be using these before you go to the polling booth. We will be training all of our polling station staff on these apps so that they are fully informed on how best to support you in the polling station. If you would prefer to bring a companion with you to assist in voting, as opposed to receiving assistance from a member of staff at the polling station, this is also possible. Your companion must either be a close relative who is aged 18 years or over, or a qualified elector. The voter should ask the permission of the presiding officer to be assisted by their companion. The companion, not the voter, is required by law to complete a simple declaration called declaration to be made by the companion of a voter with disabilities. The companion should fill out the declaration and sign the document. If requested, polling staff can also assist you with marking your ballot paper.
Now going to finally move on to cover some key dates for this election. So firstly, if you are not already registered to vote, the easiest way to register to vote is online at gov.uk/register-to-vote. Or if you live in Wolverhampton, you can call our office and register over the phone on 01902 551177. There are a number of ways to have your say. You can vote in the polling station, by post, or by appointing somebody you trust to vote on your behalf, known as a proxy vote. The deadline to vote by proxy is Tuesday, the 25th of April at 5 p.m. To download the forms to vote by proxy, please visit our website, wolverhampton.gov.uk/elections. Alternatively, you can contact us to request a form be posted out to you on 01902 551177, or you can email us at electoral.services@wolverhampton.gov.uk. If you are unable to make your signature on the postal vote application form due to a disability, then you can contact us to request a signature waiver. And finally, you can find out more about all of this on our website at wolverhampton.gov.uk/elections. Thank you.
Up next, we hear from Helen, who of course has for us the Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen with your Beacon update. So firstly, I hope if you mark it, you had a really enjoyable Easter and perhaps, like me, indulged in a chocolate egg or two. Now, did you use the bank holiday weekend to have a sort out at home? Well, if you've got any good quality clothes, homeware and furniture that you could donate to our shops, you'll help us to make a difference for someone impacted by sight loss. You can find your nearest shop on our website, and that's www.beaconvision.org, or call us on 01902 880111. Now, talking about Easter, we would like to say a very big well done to Angie, who won our Easter raffle. She collected her prize, a super sized chocolate egg, and I do mean super sized, it was 1 meter high, from our Sedgley shop. We'd like to thank everyone who entered the raffle. Together, you helped us raise £572 to support people impacted by sight loss living locally. Now, our members had a Boston time when they took a trip to the Black Country Living Museum recently. The visit gave them a chance to learn more about what life was like in the region in years gone by. We've got more trips planned for later in the year, so if you'd like to join our next tour, get in touch. It's 01902 880111, or you can also email us at inquiries@beaconvision.org. And don't forget, we've also got our weekly activity programme, which includes everything from a book club to swimming and cookery to community walks. Whether you're new to Beacon or new to a particular activity, you can be sure of a very warm welcome. Please give us a call to find out more. Lastly, this week, we would like to say a very happy Vaisakhi. For all those celebrating, we wish you good health, prosperity, and of course, happiness. That's it for this week. I'll be back again soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers for that update, Helen. Up now, we're our next block of local news. And starting this one off, we first hear Christine.
The Black Country Global Geopark has been selected to take part in a pilot project which will help shape the future of UNESCO-designated sites across the UK. The Black Country officially became a world-famous UNESCO Global Geopark in 2020, recognising it as a place with internationally important geology. Geopark status recognises the many world-class natural and important cultural features in the Black Country and how they come to tell the story of the landscape and the people that live within it. The Geopark is one of three UK UNESCO-designated sites to be chosen as part of the Local to Global project. The project, led by the UK National Commission for UNESCO, UKNC, is funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund, thanks to National Lottery players. Over the course of the next 18 months, UKNC will work with the pilot sites to look at the best way to create a resilient network of sites. Its work will focus on how to better engage with audiences, how to make UNESCO sites financially sustainable, and develop digital platforms. It is hoped the results of the project will benefit all UK-designated sites, with the added ambition of helping to achieve UNESCO's 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. Jane Lamine, strategic lead for the Black Country Global Geopark, said, "Our greatest ambition is to engage with more people and celebrate the many geological, cultural and historical wonders of the Black Country. We are therefore delighted that the Black Country has been chosen as one of the pilot sites for this project. Having only been designated UNESCO status in 2020, we remain the newest site in the UK and are still in our infancy. We are the only urban geopark in the UK, so we are unique and feel we have a lot to offer and a lot to learn from being part of this project. We're excited to see what the next 18 months will bring." The geopark scheme is led by all four Black Country authorities, Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton, as well as key organisations including Natural England, the Canal and River Trust and the Wildlife Trust for Birmingham and the Black Country.
A siren will go off on nearly every smartphone in the UK on Sunday the 23rd of April, the government has announced. The 10 seconds of sound and vibration at 1500 hours British summer time will test a new emergency alerts system. The test had originally been planned for the early evening, but was moved to avoid clashing with an FA Cup semi-final, which kicks off at 16:30. The government was also keen to avoid a clash with the London Marathon, which starts at 9:30 on that Sunday. The alert system will be used to warn of extreme weather events, such as flash floods or wildfires. It could also be used during terror incidents or civil defence emergencies if the UK was under attack. The minister in charge of the system, Oliver Dowden, said it would be used only in situations where there was an immediate risk to life. In most cases, it will be targeted at very specific areas rather than the entire country, and according to officials, may not be used for months or years. He insisted a national test of the system was needed, but the time had been chosen to minimise disruption to people's lives. "We chose the afternoon for it because that is quieter than the morning, when people are more likely to be shopping or attending church services," said the minister. The test message and alarm is expected to hit 90% of mobile phones in the UK. Phone users can swipe away the alert message or click OK on their home screen to continue using their phone as normal. People who have their phone switched off will not receive the message, but it will sound if your phone is switched to silent. The government has also tried to play down concerns that drivers will be distracted by the alerts, potentially leading to accidents, saying evidence from local trials of the alert shows people will wait until they are stationary to check their phones. All 4G and 5G Android and Apple phones are already fitted with emergency alert capability, as similar systems are in use in the United States, Canada, Japan, and other countries around the world. But it is possible to turn the alerts off, something domestic abuse charity Refuge is advising vulnerable people how to do ahead of the test. Emma Pickering, Senior Operations Tech Abuse Manager at Refuge, said, "Our concerns are centred on the very real risk to survivors of domestic abuse who may have secret or secondary phones hidden within the home, which they must ensure are not discovered by their abusers. These devices can be a lifeline for women who need to access support or flee their abuser." She added, "These alerts will come through as a loud siren, even if devices are on silent, and could alert an abuser to a concealed device." Mr. Dowden said the government had held talks with domestic abuse charities and taken their concerns on board when planning a publicity campaign ahead of the 23rd of April.
Councils in the Black Country are drawing up plans for how they will help the region's most vulnerable households after being given millions of pounds in government funding. The funding, allocated by the Department for Work and Pensions, the DWP, to councils in England and announced earlier this month, will extend the Household Support Fund for another year. Dudley was allocated £5.25 million, Sandwell £6.9 million, Walsall £5.6 million and Wolverhampton £5.26 million. Councils get to decide how best to spend their allocation of the fund by drawing from local knowledge and making direct contact with people in the community. They will be able to support the most vulnerable households in the area, helping them with the cost of essentials like groceries, toiletries and warm clothes, as well as providing further support with energy bills. Ian Newman, Dudley Council's Director of Finance and Legal Services, said, "As in previous rounds, a majority of the money is being distributed through key council services and organisations within the voluntary sector to get help to those they are aware of and who are the most vulnerable. A proportion of the fund has also been set aside to help eligible residents who contact the council in need. This means people will be able to apply for grants of up to £175 once the application process opens." A spokesperson for Sandwell Council said, "Officers are now working swiftly on plans for getting this money to those most in need. Previously, we have used this funding for free school meal vouchers during holidays and payments to people on low incomes. We are also looking at how we can use this money to help households not in receipt of benefits likely to be affected by the cost of living increase over the coming months." Wolverhampton Council said it was in the process of drawing up a plan for how the latest round of the Household Support Fund should be used over the coming year. The Household Support Fund was first launched on October 6, 2021 and has been extended several times. The latest extension lasts until March 31, 2024 and represents the fourth edition of the fund. Local authorities have discretion on how they design and deliver their scheme depending on local need within the parameters of the guidance set out by the DWP.
Clinics have opened for the COVID spring vaccinations this week. The next stage of the vaccination programme kicked off on Monday to give added protection to those over the age of 75 and people with weakened immune systems. More than 260 clinics in the West Midlands have opened, offering vaccinations to those who are eligible. More than 43,000 people across the Midlands have already made bookings via the National Booking Service, and many more people have booked through their own GP surgeries. In the West Midlands, there are around 690,000 people eligible for the spring vaccine. Everyone eligible will receive an invitation by text, by letter, or through the NHS app. They are encouraged to book via the National Booking Service. Eligible people in the Black Country are also being urged to come forward to get their jab. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for the NHS Black Country Integrated Care Board, said, "Although life has gone back to normal for most people, COVID-19 is still with us and continues to be more serious in older people and in people with certain underlying health conditions. Booster doses are safe, effective, and help to top up your protection against serious illness from the virus. So I would urge anyone who is eligible for a spring booster to book their appointment as soon as they can. Anyone who believes they should be eligible for a vaccine but does not get invited can check online. Alternatively, they can self-declare via the National Booking Service and then speak to a clinician on site."
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition, and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. What can't male honeybees do that female bees can? Question 2. How many eggs can a queen honeybee lay per day? Question 3. How much honey can a bee make during its lifetime? Question 4. How long can a queen bee live? Question 5. Roughly how many flowers are visited to make 1 pound of honey? And finally, question 6. What's the old English name for a bumblebee? I will be back with you with the answers later, but for now, best of luck.
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on those. Up now, however, it's another block of local news.
An ancient beech, thought to be the oldest at a Midland beauty spot, has been uprooted in high winds. The landmark beech, which stood on the Clent Hills between Hales Owen and Stourbridge for more than 250 years, was blown over by heavy gusts last Wednesday afternoon, narrowly missing walkers at the National Trust site. Among those to hear it fall was Trust walk guide Adrian Jones, who had walked past it with a group of visitors moments earlier. Mr. Jones, 67, of Quarry Lane, Hales Owen, said, "Yesterday we were finishing a four-mile walk and we'd got to the easy access path near the Nimmings car park when we heard a massive thud behind us. Someone came up and said the tree toppled over in front of a man and his daughter. They seemed quite calm considering what had happened. We couldn't believe it. I'd walked past it about a minute before with my group, and we'd been talking about it. As we passed the tree, I had told the walking group that in the past, the nickname for beech trees was Widow Maker, owing to their habit of dropping heavy branches on unsuspecting agricultural workers. Moments later, the whole tree toppled over, ripping through the large roots. We were certainly lucky to have moved along the path." Mr. Jones added, "The park wardens just happened to arrive at the same time and very quickly got their chainsaws out to clear the branches from where they were blocking the footpath. It fell straight across the footpath. It was a good job nobody was next to it. A branch had fallen off it previously, but there was no indication that the entire tree, which had been there for between 250 to 300 years, was going to fall immediately. Beech trees are quite sturdy and, like oaks, tend to live for a very long time. It's quite sad, really, as it's been here for so long and weighs hundreds of tons. It was very sad to see the old tree go. It has been a notable feature of many of our guided walks, and now we shall just see a hole and share a story of a near miss," the retired manager added.
A community group has transformed an urban area of Briley Hill into a green oasis. Echo Collective has been busily transforming three unused allotment plots at Horbush Community Garden into a therapeutic sensory garden. The three main driving forces behind Echo Collective are local women Deb MacDonald, Erica Cashelia and Claire Evans, a not-for-profit organisation focused on improving health and well-being through green projects. It has transformed the allotment plots with the support of grants from the National Garden Society and West Midland Combined Authority. Erica, who has overseen the planning of the garden, explained the funding will enable it to increase access to green spaces and improve biodiversity, the criteria for the two grants. Echo has been offering support to two groups every week, a gardening group and a heritage craft group. Deb said, "We were asked to support a social prescribing project, working with clients who have a history of mental health challenges, which were not necessarily medical issues. These will be people in isolation and those needing community support." Echo Collective strives to use organic permaculture principles such as a no-dig approach to gardening, making their own compost, the mulches, and conserving water sources. It works with isolated people, helping them to gain confidence in gardening and learning about environmentally friendly gardening. It also offers families affordable activities during the school holidays in a safe green space. The garden is a therapeutic space for participants and a resource to continue their successful social prescribing work and food bank provision through the allotments. Claire explained how she got involved. She said, "No matter what we're doing, whether copper crafting or sowing seeds or just sitting and talking, there's something about the space that's really unique and allows people to feel connected with something that is bigger than themselves." Horbush is unique because it is a space in an urban area that is an actual oasis of nature. Work is also underway to create a bespoke roundhouse shelter within the area. Funding for the projects includes a grant from Briley Hill Community Forum Grant and other local members of the community.
A lost tortoise found in a Black Country street by a member of the public is being looked after by mystified vets who want to track down its owner. Rosewood Vets, which is based in Mason Street, Coseley, posted on its Facebook page that the team was handed a tortoise after a member of the public found it in the Hurst Hill area last Tuesday. They added that no microchip has been found. The tortoise was found on Rock Road in the Hurst Hill area of Bilston, and the veterinary surgery said that there are no visual injuries, no one has come forward yet, and that they are just trying to get it to eat. Anyone with information regarding the tortoise is advised to contact Rosewood Vets either via their social media or can call them on 01902 671 777.
An ancient Dudley woodland sealed off from the public following an outbreak of a deadly tree disease has been reopened. Alder Coppice in Sedgley, one of the largest ancient woodlands in the West Midlands, was fenced off for a month while Dudley Council contractors dealt with 42 trees suffering from ash dieback. 32 trees at the 25-acre site had to be felled after succumbing to the disease, while a further 10 were cut back in the hope that they can recover over time. A number of saplings have been planted in place of the lost trees. Alder Coppice, off Northway, is one of 142 ancient woodlands in the West Midlands and one of just 10 covering more than 20 acres. Simon Biggs, chairman of the Friends of Alder Coppice, said volunteers would be assessing the state of the woodland before deciding what restoration work would be needed. Obviously, some of the paths will need some repair, and this may take some time, he said. The contractors have very helpfully left us piles of logs so we can continue our work on pathway construction and also wood chip as a top dressing for pathways. Mr. Biggs said the Friends group would need to talk to Dudley Council before drawing up a recovery plan. The long road back for the woodland to once again become one of the best 10 bluebell woods in the Midlands starts here, he said. We have a replanting programme planned for the autumn, with 3 trees being planted for every 1 removed. Mr. Biggs said the extra light created by the removal of the trees could lead to new wildflowers growing. Nature has a way of putting itself right, and I'm confident that with our help, Alder Coppice will thrive again, he said. Ash dieback is a fungus that spreads quickly through the air, with the wind carrying spores of bacteria. The spores settle on the tops of the ash trees and corrode the trees from the top down, also weakening their structure.
Time now for our latest edition of Site Loss Tips, provided by the charity InfoSound. For further details on any of the items and practical information in this bulletin, you can also contact Beacon's team of Site Loss Advisors on 01902 880 111, and that number again, 01902 880111.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK. News and information about living with sight loss. From InfoSound.
Hello and welcome to Edition 8 of Info Shorts from InfoSound, a brief bulletin of practical information to help living with sight loss.
And in this edition, illuminated hand magnifiers, support for vision impaired job seekers, signature guides and stamps, and a talking infrared ear and forehead thermometer.
Illuminated hand magnifiers come in all shapes and sizes and, crucially, magnification strengths. And any low vision advisor would tell you just how important it is to choose the right magnifier for your particular eye condition, but also for the job in hand, no pun intended. And handheld magnifiers are the types of products you may well find in some local resource centres, especially ones where there's also a low vision advisor.
InfoSound. RNIB and Blind Ambition, an international disability training consultancy focused on improving the lives of disabled people, are putting on a 16-week series of free weekly online webinars to support job seekers with sight loss. These webinars are aimed at helping vision-impaired job seekers to achieve the next stage in their career. So this could be finding a new role, entering employment, starting an apprenticeship, or starting up a new business. Over the next few months, they'll be covering a range of topics such as help with CV writing, different ways to market yourself, interview tips, and much more. Of course, depending on when you hear this, it's possible one or two may have already happened. But there are 16 sessions in all, and you can join any or all of them. So if you'd like to find out more and sign up for as many of these as you would like, you can phone 020 3886 2020. That's 020 3886 2020. Or email seema, that's S-E-E-M-A, at blindambition.co.uk.
InfoSound.
Now, our hint this time, along with an inexpensive product to go with it, from Anita Plant, Rehabilitation Officer and Low Vision Advisor at the national charity The Partially Sighted Society, is simple but effective. So, he asks, knowing the answer, what have we got today, Anita?
Okay, today we've got a signature guide. And a signature guide is a small credit card size piece of plastic, and it has a window cut out of it. We have them in black because that creates the most contrast against the paper. They cost 50p. You can make them yourselves out of a piece of very stiff black card if need be, but we do supply them. And the idea around it is when somebody asks you to put your signature or sign here, that you take out your nice, neat credit card size signature guide, pop it on where they want you to sign, and you sign in the box. And because it's plastic, you can actually feel the edges of the box, so your signature is contained within the window of the signature guide.
And I suppose as long as the piece of paper you're signing on is good and flat, it can be used in a whole load of different ways and different circumstances.
Absolutely. Legal documents, you know, if you're being asked to sign anything in the hospital, banks, anywhere really. It's just a useful little tool to keep with you so that you can use when you are asked to sign a document.
One thinks in this digital age where credit cards are used, PIN numbers and all that sort of thing, that the signature is a thing of the past, but they are often needed. Are there actually any alternatives to the signature guide in some circumstances?
Yeah, some banks will provide you with your signature on a stamp. So you'd need to ask your bank about that. But basically what they would do is you sign, they would make that signature into a stamp. So whenever you have to sign any of the bank documents, they will accept your signature on the stamp rather than you having to sign it. But speak to your bank, ask your bank about whether that is something that they would provide.
Super. Many thanks indeed, Anita.
You're very welcome.
InfoSound.
And finally, some information about a talking infrared ear and forehead thermometer that's sold by Cobalt Systems. It's the type that allows the user to check temperature via the ear or the forehead, giving a reading by either method in just 1 second. It needs only 2 button pushes with audible cues given before the device announces the reading in either Celsius or Fahrenheit.
Please measure. Your body temperature is 35.3 Celsius degrees.
The device automatically stores up to 12 of the previous readings, but these are not spoken. It's supplied in a protective storage case and is powered by 2 AAA batteries, which are included.
And with that, we come to the end of this 8th edition of the Info Shorts Bulletin from InfoSound. Thank you for listening, and we hope you can join us next time.
News and information about living with sight loss from InfoSound.
TNS Soundings.
Coming up next on this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have another block of local news.
Schools and groups across the region are being invited to join a colourful celebration project. The King's Bunting Project has been taken up by hundreds of groups keen to make an impressive, colourful celebration for miles and miles across the region, with bunting being created in the lead-up to the King's coronation on Saturday, May the 6th. Schools, colleges, community groups, businesses and other organisations are crafting away with the West Midlands Lieutenancy in preparation and to make the historic event particularly spectacular for all to see. The Lord Lieutenant for the West Midlands, Sir John Crabtree OBE, said he was thrilled with the uptake. The King's Bunting Project has really taken off in the West Midlands, he said. Many schools and groups have decided to use sustainable and environmentally friendly materials for the bunting to reflect the King's interests, so we are encouraging everyone to take up the challenge and do the same. The West Midlands Lieutenancy has been supporting a series of nationwide coronation campaigns and is encouraging everyone to take part and enjoy the special occasion. After the coronation on the Saturday, many people are taking part in the big lunch on Sunday, May the 7th, with communities holding street parties, meals and local celebrations to mark the coronation. Then on Monday, May the 8th, there is the big help out, where everyone has an opportunity to lend a hand and have a go at volunteering to make a difference to their community. The Big Help Out website, thebighelpout.org.uk, has a list of opportunities and people can now register for volunteering following the launch of the site on March the 20th. To join in with the King's Bunting Project, register an organisation with the West Midlands Lieutenancy either on Twitter, Instagram or Facebook with the hashtag TheKingsBunting or by emailing office@wmlieutenancy.org.
Two local garden centres have announced a couple of community initiatives to celebrate the King's coronation. Bridge North Garden Centre and Albrighton Garden Centre are using local residents if they know a group, garden, charity or hospice that has gone above and beyond through trying times. In honour of the King's coronation, the two centres, which are part of the British Garden Centres group, are donating accolade trees from their stores to be planted by the winner and celebrated by the local areas as they watch the coronation celebratory grow year after year. Groups can be nominated via the British Garden Centre's website and entries close on the 27th of April, with the winner announced on April 30th. The two garden centres are also asking children and local schools to take part in a cake-making competition. From Union Jack designs to a cake version of Windsor Castle, the garden centres say they want to see what young bakers can dream up for this moment in history. The competition will close on the 3rd of May, with the winner receiving an incredible gardening and baking themed hamper, as well as a £100 British Garden Centre's gift card. Steph Woolley, manager of Bridge North Garden Centre, said, "We want to bring the community together for our new King Charles III and Queen Camilla. Celebratory will recognise the hard-working groups and individuals that make our community what it is, as well as planting a tree which will benefit future generations. And what is a coronation party without cake? We can't wait to see children's designs and bring them to life, creating a cake worthy of a place in the bake-off final."
King Charles. How will the West Midlands mark the coronation? With less than a month to go until the coronation of King Charles, preparations for the celebrations are well underway. From street parties to screenings of the ceremony, there is lots going on in the West Midlands as the UK prepares for its first new monarch in seven decades on the 6th of May. We have compiled a list of events happening in the region, but we would love to hear from you if you are planning an event too, so get in touch. Birmingham and the Black Country. Birmingham's Centenary Square will be home to a big screen to show the coronation on the 6th of May, and there will be a full programme of entertainment across the weekend. There will also be a live screening at Sandwell Valley, where there will also be street food, fair rides and community stalls. In Wolverhampton and Walsall, residents can apply for a grant of £250 and £150 respectively to celebrate the coronation in their community. Coventry and Warwickshire. A huge screen will be installed in Broadgate, Coventry, to show the coronation on the 6th of May. There will also be a picnic and street entertainers at the free event. The picnic returns to Broadgate on the 7th of May, with more street entertainers as well as a brass band and craft activities. Coombe Country Park will be hosting a free garden party event on the 7th of May, with music, games and street food. In Warwick, there will be a party in the square in the marketplace, complete with live bands and the town crier.
Hereford and Worcestershire. The Mayor of Worcester will host a coronation big lunch at the Guildhall on the 7th of May. Organisations have been invited to nominate community heroes to attend. There will also be a free event at the Hive Library in Worcester on the 6th of May. The coronation will be live streamed in Leinster Village Hall, and there are also plans for a free hog roast in Home Lacey Village Hall on the 7th of May. The Severn Valley Railway is also hosting an event with a big screen at its Kidderminster depot. It costs £15 per person. Shropshire. Shropshire Council is encouraging people to host street parties with neighbours, although you will need to apply for road closures. In Telford, the council said it has approved dozens of applications for street parties as well as public screenings of the coronation. Parties are also planned in Buildwas Village Hall and in Longdon. Stoke and Staffordshire. Tamworth Council said it will be pulling out all the stops over the weekend with live music at the bandstand, fun runs and street parties. Penkridge Gardens are planning a free lunch event on the 6th of May and say all children will get a free goodie bag. Expect a big screen in Rugeley and a seaside themed party complete with local music acts. In Stoke-on-Trent, you'll be able to visit the Potteries Museum for a special exhibition featuring costumes made for kings and queens in period film and TV dramas.
Up now, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature.
Hello again, everyone. I hope that you all enjoyed this Easter time and weren't sickened by too much chocolate and sweet things, of course, because this week I found out some snippets about honey and bees. So sit back and absorb these little quips. Only female honeybees can sting. The males or drones are not able to sting. But if you are stung, it'll probably be by a worker. Queen honeybees can sting, but they remain close to the hive, and so a sting from a honeybee queen would be very rare. If the queen honeybee is removed from the hive, though, within 15 minutes, the rest of the colony knows about it. And a queen honeybee is about twice the length of a worker. A honeybee queen may lay as many as 2,000 to 3,000 eggs per day as she establishes a colony. Beekeepers have devised various means to estimate the number of bees in a hive. In any case, a typical active honeybee colony may have around 50,000 workers, but could also have between 20 and 60,000 workers. And a bee may typically fly between 1 to 6 kilometres on a foraging trip, but also up to 13.5 kilometres, and it's thought that 20 kilometres isn't unusual. No wonder honeybees need a lot of energy. Honeybees fly up 15 miles an hour and beat their wings 200 times per second, or 12,000 beats per minute, and each honeybee only makes about 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey in its lifetime. A queen bee should certainly live 2 years, but may even live 3 to 4 years, whilst drones live for 55 days on average, and worker honeybees raised in the spring may only live 6 to 7 weeks, but those raised in the autumn may live 4 to 6 months. And to produce a pound of honey, foraging honeybees have to fly a whopping 55,000 miles. That's a lot of honeybees working very hard. And oh, that's despite the fact that a foraging honeybee visits up to 100 flowers per foraging trip. So no wonder it takes 556 foraging bees to visit 2 million flowers just to make 1 pound of honey. And if you ever wondered if bumblebees can make honey, well, they do, but only for their own use. Bumblebees collect nectar and store it for a short time in their honey pots back at the nest. However, the nectar stores are eaten soon after they've been collected and do not go through a transformation process to make honey. Well, there you are then, with a very few bits and pieces to mull over. The subject of honey is vast, and the medicinal value of it is still underestimated and yet to be fully understood. Incidentally, the old English word for bumblebee is Dumbledore. So Harry Potter fans, watch out for Professor Bumblebee when he's buzzing round your gardens. In Roundup, look, I'm off. Because this week, I shall enjoy my Kit Kat again with my cuppa, now Lent and Easter is over. Till next week then, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit, ta-ra.
Up now, We had to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, as always, by Mina.
The weather for this week ahead is forecast to be rather settled, with glorious spells of sunshine set to continue. Temperatures are forecast to be mild, averaging around 16 degrees. UV levels are expected to remain at medium as we continue to see these large spells of sunshine. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:50 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:25 p.m. for the sunset. Moving on to Friday, 21st of April, is forecast to be dry and sunny, with a very small chance of a rain shower breaking through in the late afternoon. With just a moderate breeze, temperatures should still reach a maximum of 17 degrees. The spell of dry, sunny intervals should remain with us throughout the whole weekend. With just a gentle breeze, temperatures over the weekend will continue to hold up well at 17 degrees. On to next week, and I'll be a lot more of the same, with plenty of spring bright sunshine. It is forecast to remain sunny and dry in the region from Monday 24th of April and continuing right through to Wednesday 26th of April. There is a chance of some light showers creeping in late on Wednesday and into Thursday 25th of April, but there will still be plenty of sunny intervals as the high pressure dominates. With just the gentle breeze all week, temperatures should continue to stay mild, around 16 degrees. So, that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Up now, it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
It was a weekend ablaze with spells of spring sunshine, and fortunes also shone bright on the pitch for both Black Country clubs too, with Wolves and West Brom earning themselves well-deserved victories that handed their respective quests for Premier League survival and the push for promotion huge boosts. The Baggies showed character in spades to fight back and win at Stoke, with Jason Malumbi's second-half double breathing new life into a playoff push. Carlos Corberan's visitors looked resigned to yet more disappointment away from the Hawthorns after Jacob Brown's header handed the hosts a deserved first-half lead. But midfielder Malumbi, back among the Baggies starters after an injury layoff, struck two scrappy goals within 10 minutes either side of the hour to keep the playoff dreams alive and complete a dramatic turnaround in front of 2,500 delirious travelling supporters at the Bet 365 Stadium. The comeback victory, a first away win in more than 3 months, keeps Albion in contention in the top six race and slices the gap to the playoffs to just 3 points. On an otherwise memorable afternoon, Albion did suffer the hammer blow of losing striker Daryl Dyke to what looked like another lengthy injury, as the American's ankle appeared to buckle under no pressure. He was stretchered off late in the first half with a suspected Achilles injury. For Wolves, it was much more comfortable, as, buoyed by the result over Chelsea last week, it was back-to-back wins and another step closer to safety with a 2-0 victory over Brentford. Wolves started well at Molineux and eventually took the lead when Diego Costa notched his first goal for the club. The striker, who arrived on a free transfer in September, put in a stellar performance, and manager Julen Lopetegui was delighted to see him get off the mark in Wolves' colours, believing it was just reward for his hard work off the field. Wolves, much like they were against Chelsea, were organised and compact in defence, with captain Kilman impressing once again. With Brentford unable to create any clear-cut opportunities to get back into the game, it was only a matter of time before the dynamic midfield of Lemina, Nunes and Gomez carved an opening to put the game out of reach. After a fine solo run down the right flank by Mateus Nunes, last week's goal scorer turned provider, sliding in a low cross for Hwang Hee-chan to score his second goal in 3 games and secure all 3 points. The result now steers Wolves up to 13th position on 34 points and in a much healthier position to survive relegation this season.
Have you done any good at the quiz this week? Well, now's the time to find out, as we have the quiz answers.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. What can't male honeybees do that female bees can? And the answer is sting. Question 2. How many eggs can queen honeybee lay per day? And the answer here is as many as 2,000 to 3,000. Question 3. How much honey can a bee make during its lifetime? And the answer? Just 1/12 of a teaspoon. Question 4. How long can a queen bee live? And the answer here is, of course, between 2 and 4 years. Question 5. Roughly how many flowers are visited to make 1 pound of honey? And the answer? 2 million. And finally, question 6. What's the old English name for a bumblebee? And the answer here is Dumbledore. How did you get on? Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you once again. Bye for now.
Want to know how to get ahead in the garden for the coming season? Here's some top tips from the experts at MK Pulse magazine.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine. The Easter break for parents means the headache of entertaining the kids for a fortnight, and you can't do an egg hunt every day. But keeping their attention doesn't need to be taxing or expensive. We've got just the thing to spark their imaginations, and you'll enjoy it too. Introducing youngsters to the delights of the garden is a great thing. But while they might not get as excited as you do about pruning trees or perfect edging, all kids love mud, bugs, and being creative. So get them engaged in making a mini beast hotel. Bug hotels provide great shelter for many kinds of insects and bugs. Woodlice, earwigs, ladybirds, solitary bees, centipedes, snails, and spiders will enjoy the accommodation. Your hotel will be unique, of course, but whether you provide them with a budget place to lay their heads or an insect version of the Dorchester is really down to you and the choice of materials you use. You can be as creative as you like. Good use of items that might well otherwise go to waste. A simple wooden box or old pallet will provide you with a solid base from which to work. You'll need to leave it open at one end and can then begin filling it with natural materials that will be attractive to bed down in. Try to mix it up when it comes to furnishings. Wood and plant matter are all good additions, but the list of materials might also include old plant pots or roofing tiles, wood chip, moss, old cardboard rolled up, pine cones and bark. Bricks are ideal too. They are weighty, and if you use the ones with holes in, you'll maximise spaces for visitors to utilise. If you have old logs to put towards the project, drilling holes into them will encourage guests. It's all about providing the little creatures with nooks and crannies and warm spots where they can snuggle up. Kids will love creating these little houses, but they don't need to be petite. If you've got the space and the materials, feel free to build a high-rise. Bug hotels aren't just about bed spaces, though. They'll be wanting dinner too, and nectar-rich flowers planted close by will be appreciated by visiting bees and butterflies. The only other thing a bug hotel requires is to be dry, so think about where in the garden you will place yours. It's best not to pop it straight next to your vegetables or flowers, in case the visitors decide on some unwanted snacking, and it obviously needs to be on flat, solid ground. Then sit back and wait for the mini beast to move in. It's a great way to encourage children to learn about nature on their doorstep and a brilliant way to use up time productively. And this month's top tip is, now that you are back outdoors, you'll be noticing that spring flowers aren't the only thing popping their heads towards the early sun. Weeds are becoming active too. The easiest way to deal with weeds amongst your flowers and veggie patches is to use a hoe. But a fork or your fingers are fine too. Depending on the area you are treating and the nature of growth, you might choose to use mulch or ageing barriers to keep things in check. Whatever you decide, you need to understand that weeds will always return and that weed killers are never the best or preferred way to solve the problem.
TNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!